This is Professor Allen, and welcome to The Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will select sort of at random. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 132nd episode of The Quarter Bin, we're looking at All New X-Men 32 from Marvel Comics, cover dated November 2014. But first, a little feedback. On episode 131, I was joined by Shag to talk about a Doctor Who comic. Feedback for the episode was actually covered on our recent Shortbox Showcase, where we covered all of the February feedback we'd gotten up to that point. So, technically speaking, we're not going to cover any feedback in this episode, but I do have a shout-out to give. I learned a few weeks ago that not only am I not the only person on my campus to do a podcast, I'm not the only person on my campus to do a comic book podcast. So check out my colleague Drew and his brother on their weekly show, Comics for Fun and Profit. And follow them on Twitter at ComicsFunProfit. And congratulations on their upcoming episode 500. We're trying to figure out how we can work together on something. That's a process that Kyle Benning described as, after seeing me post about this on Twitter, as hashtag campus crossover. We'll see what we can make happen about that. And just so you know, anytime from here on in over on the Comics Reading Journal, whenever I mention picking up comics from the 50-cent bins at Pulp Reality, that is a store in the city where our campus is that Drew recommended. So there's that. Thanks, buddy. Which means now, it's time to just jump right into this issue. All New X-Men 32 at a cover price of $3.99, meaning I acquired this from Half Price Books at a very nice 93.7% discount. Man, I miss the days when our local Half Price Books locations had quarter bins, which means I must have bought this book shortly after it was released, because it's been at least 3 years, I'd say, since the prices for their cheapest books got jacked up to a dollar. And on a recent trip to Half Price Books, they were pricing stuff at $1.25, $1.50, and $1.99. This is just crazy talk. I mean, I remember those dark days when the Central Ohio cheap bins were on the verge of disappearing. The Half Price Books price hike to a buck came shortly on the heels of, or maybe a few months before, the closing of In the Ballpark, the late lamented home of the quarterly quarter bin sales, where literally thousands and thousands of 25-cent books were on sale for a week at a time, four times a year. I still have a soft spot in my heart for that store, as that was the first place I discovered the glories of super cheap comics. The first few dozen episodes of this show covered books exclusively purchased from In the Ballpark. But fortunately, by the time those axes fell, I had just discovered World's Greatest Comics, a great little store that always has three or four long boxes of 25-cent books on the floor. I mean, they're literally on the floor, under the tables where the dollar boxes are. But they are my current provider of cheap books. Of course, the Quarterbin database has books from all of those stores and a few others, so we'll probably hit another one from Half Price Books at some point, but I did want to point out that store and my memories of when it had quarter books. So sorry about that diversion. Let's get on to this issue. And this time, I mean it. The cover of All New X-Men 32 by Sarah Pacelli and Marte Garcia shows a series of panels around the border of the cover, showing a total of five team members, And in the middle of them is Miles Morales. And we get this cover copy. Welcome to the X-Men, Miles Morales. Hope you survive the experience. I like it. Each of the panels and center inset have different colored backgrounds, so it's kind of like a collage of poster shots. It's interesting and attention-getting. I mean, it caught my attention, so it must have worked, right? The story in this issue, for which I could find no title in the story or on ComicBookDB, was written by Brian Michael Bendis, with art by Mahmoud Asrar. We start with a page of Previously On, which, by the way, the more I read miscellaneous Marvel books from the last handful of years, either out of the cheap bins or that lovely listener send in, I've really come to appreciate this recap or setup page. I know if you're a regular reader of Marvel, it's probably annoying and it takes away a page of story. But it really helps those of us who dip in and out of titles over the years. And from that page, this is what I learned. The original X-Men, Jean Grey, Cyclops, Iceman, Angel, and Beast, were brought to the present in an attempt to shine a light on the errors of the present-day X-Men. Unable to return to the past, the all-new X-Men have taken up residence at the new Xavier School, along with new teammate X-23 and their professor Kitty Pryde. However, they recently lost their leader, the young Scott Summers, when he left to explore space with his father Corsair, whom he had long thought dead. With the teachers of the new Xavier School gone to attend the reading of the Last Will and Testament of Charles Xavier, the all-new X-Men have been left to their own devices. After receiving an unusual, distressing signal from Cerebro, they decided to embark on a mission to assist a newly emerging mutant. Arriving to meet the young girl Carmen, the X-Men attempted to calm her and offered to take her someplace safe. However, feeling that they were trying to kidnap her, Carmen fought back, unleashing her power in a flash of light, finding herself in completely unfamiliar surroundings. Jean flew to a rooftop to get a better vantage point and was confronted by a surprising stranger, Miles Morales, the Ultimate Spider-Man. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I use the synopses at uncannyxmen.net as the jumping-off point for the synopsis that I'm using for this episode. And based on the style of story, the jumping around we're going to do, my lack of familiarity with the younger versions of these characters, a lot more of their synopsis ended up in this final product than any other time I've used an existing synopsis to start off with. And all of that brings us to a prehistoric jungle in what I am told in the online synopsis is Earth 1610. A blonde, savage-looking young man with Wolverine-like claws asks Angel who the hell he's supposed to be. Angel suggests he put the claws back into the Wolverine costume box where he undoubtedly found them. The boy snarls and advances menacingly. Angel replies that one of them is having a psychotic break, and he decides to fly away. The clawed boy sniffs the air and decides that the other guy was Angel, but not the one that worked with his dad. Elsewhere, a young, more clean-cut fella, who seems to be a young beast, finds himself underwater. Heading for a light, he swims upward and drags himself ashore at a lovely stretch of beach, surprising a couple of young lovers. From the landscape and the language, he's got a pretty good feeling where he is. Mediterranean coast? Turkey? Fascinating. X-23 lands in the middle of a football field during a game. I will say at this point that the online synopsis calls this a match, leading me to believe that the writers of the online synopsis are from Europe or South America or somewhere else where the soccer version of football is the dominant sport. When a player is about to run into X-23, she topples him with a judo move. The rest of the players are angry and toxically masculine. Get the hell off the field. We're in the middle of a game, you dumb. Another player reiterates that she needs to get off the field, but he makes the mistake of touching her. This causes her to unsheathe her claws, and the crowd and players realize she's a mutant, and they flee the field and the stadium. Somewhere underground, a weird Baldy, who turns out to be Iceman, is surrounded by a weird audience. See, literally a second ago, I was with my team of time-displaced X-Men. We're mutants, and we were meeting this new mutant, and then, I'm like, here? He wonders where he is. He is inside the Earth, the Mole Man snarls in response. You are in my kingdom. The Mole Man orders his moloids to grab him, which they do, which kind of grosses out Iceman. Seriously, not cool. Help? On a New York rooftop, Jean Grey has come face to face with the new Spider-Man, Miles Morales. This is weird, she admits. Really? Which part? He asks. She hopes he hasn't unlocked another new part of her powers. He tells her he is Spider-Man and noticed the ruckus she caused on the street. Jean admits she doesn't know what's going on and wonders if he's wearing a new costume, which he isn't. Jean introduces herself and Miles recalls that they've met. Galactus, giant purple thing that ate New Jersey, you came with Kitty Pryde and the X-Men. Now, Jean has no idea whatsoever what he's talking about. There is no way you could forget a big purple guy who tries to eat the world. Jean tells him she's going to do something he won't like, but she really has to. She warns him she will read his thoughts, which makes Miles very nervous. I'm a teenage boy and I can't always... In a pretty cool wordless two-page spread, we see about 20 little black and white and red vignettes of Miles' life and career. And with that, Jean realizes she is on the wrong Earth. He understands this. You're from the other Earth where Peter Parker is still alive. Who's Peter Parker? Jean asks. Realizing his faux pas, Miles just mutters, nobody. Jean explains the girl sent her to another dimension. Now she is in the wrong time and space. I am not having a great year. Jean realizes he's been to her Earth, and he replies that he knows how to get her back. He grabs her around the waist to fly off, but Jean protests that she can fly herself. Miles apologizes, which is pretty nice. He swings ahead and she follows while he angsts that she knows his real name, but she promises not to tell anyone. In the meantime, X-23 has liberated a motorbike and is being chased by a huge squad of police cars. This is like legitimate live PD stuff. A cop is about to fire at her, and Laura jumps off the bridge to ricochet from the top of a school bus to finally land on a truck. Now, meanwhile, Miles has led Jean to a building in Manhattan, warning her that scientists and the SHIELD agents there are really going to freak out about her. But the place is empty. Nobody is there. And certainly not the rift in space he told Jean about. Well, actually one person is there, young Amadeus Cho. He joins them and announces darkly that the tear just closed, just like that. And his work is incomplete, and the government closed the checkbook. Thanks, Obama. Spider-Man tells Amadeus that Jean is from the other Earth and needs to go home. Can he help her? Cho replies, unless they know of another rip in space-time that opens up precisely to the same reality, it's going to take decades to get her home. I think you better get used to the fact that you're stuck here. Elsewhere, Hank has reached a small, quaint-looking European town, and by this point he is growing a 5 o'clock shadow that actually gives him a bit of that young beast look. He's realized that what little Turkish he knows doesn't really help him much. Some people have identified him as an American tourist, and they take some pictures of him. One man says he looks like a superhero. Superheroes don't come to here, man. You die here. Henry decides they're having a bit of a language problem, maybe, with the whole dying here part, but the man continues. You come here, you doom. The people back away from Hank as a number of green-robed machines land around him. Oh, this isn't Turkey, he says, now surrounded by Doombots. This is Latveria. The end.
Okay, I think I got the call set up. George, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. John, is that you?
Hey, that's me. Mo, can you hear us?
Oh, yep.
Cool. I've been having a lot of fun with our new YouTube channel, Gen X Grown Up. What about you guys?
Oh, that's cool, man.
I just wish we could do more. I mean, we put out videos twice a week. Ever since I stopped working at broadcast, I love generating content for people to enjoy. They like our videos, but if only there was something else.
Well, you know, I'm a big podcast fan.
Oh. What now?
Podcast?
Is that the radio on the internet?
Yeah. It's like without video. But no, I mean, I love them just because, like, good for car rides and all that kind of stuff. I listen to them all the time.
So wait a minute. We're going to create something new by going 60 years back in the past?
Until the self-driving cars, I think this is the way it's going to go. I mean, what would we do it about?
We're Gen Xers. Mm-hmm. We grew up in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And well, we love...
I'm not sure what? I'm growing up yet, but...
Okay. Okay. We got older throughout the course of the 70s
okay,
and 80s.
Let's put it that way.
We play video games still. Yeah, we love technology.
Oh, yeah. Gotta have the gadgets.
Yeah,
movies,
so does my wallet.
TV.
Yeah.
We'll get together. We'll talk about that stuff. We'll talk about our YouTube channel, the stuff that we're doing on it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we do, like, movie reviews, that kind of stuff, too.
Absolutely.
All right, that'd be cool. Why not?
Can we? I want to talk about comic books a little bit.
There you go.
I think that's appropriate.
Well, it makes sense.
But will anybody subscribe to something like this?
You know what? That remains to be seen.
Do we
okay,
care?
So if they're going to subscribe, question. How are they going to find the subscription?
They can always go to genxgrownup.com, and you're always going to see new episodes posted there.
Oh,
but they can also find it in iTunes and Pocket Cast, wherever they subscribe to podcasts.
How often do you think about we doing this thing?
You know what? I think we do it every day.
No, every day.
How about every other week?
Every other week sounds better.
I can do every other week, yeah.
Yeah, we do every
day. Wait a minute. You just said every day, so we'd agree to every other week, didn't you?
I think that's what you did.
I did.
Because
you would have said that
first. But did we just commit to doing
something
here?
No, wait. You committed.
We committed? Oh, my God.
If you're listening to this trailer, go ahead and subscribe. A new episode every other Thursday from then till the end of ever.
The end of ever?
The end of ever?
You're really optimistic about my life expectancy, aren't you?
Oh, really?
We'll see you there.
See you there.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
And we're back. The closest we've come to covering an X-book here on the Quarterbin Podcast in the prior 131 episodes, in the prior almost 6 years, was the epic episode 100, where we spent less than 10 minutes speaking with Michael Bailey about X-Force 25, and Bishop number 4 with Sir Iowa's Joe, XSE number 2 with, well, that was just me actually, New Mutants 58 with Scott McGregor, Alpha Flight with Shag. Are they mutants? And the only books with the word X and men was X-Men 2099, 3 and 14 with Dave Walker. But of course, those were pretty brief discussions, 6 or 7 minutes each, and none of them were actually core X-Men titles. And here we are, finally covering an X-Men book. Although, again, I'm not sure how close this all-new title was to the center of the X universe, but I'm counting this as the moment we finally talk about an X book for reals. Now, actually, through the wonders of modern podcasting and editing, I just checked, and this title, All New X-Men, was a pretty good seller. According to the excellent Comicron site, this specific issue landed at number 39 on the sales chart, or 11th among all Marvel books, selling almost 55,000 copies to retailers. It fell between two issues of Uncanny X-Men, numbers 25 and 26. So that tells me that at least at the time, a few years back, this was considered to be a core X-Men title. So why has it taken this long, you may be wondering, to actually talk X-Men? Everyone loves them, right? Well, there are a few reasons I could hide behind, like the randomizer. There are at this point hundreds and hundreds of issues in the Quarterbin database, and an X-Men book has just never been picked. And that is true, except that, even though running the randomizer does put the selection out of my control, what is in control is the contents of the Quarterbin database. So I decide which books I buy to put in that database. And the randomizer hasn't picked the next book because I haven't bought any for the show. Because, I'm sorry, I feel like I failed comic book fandom. But I'm not a fan. I've tried a number of times here and there, but not really a fan. The closest I've ever come to collecting X-books were a few years of Power Pack and New Mutants, and some Wolverines back in the early days of the miniseries and his ongoing, which is to say, I honestly believe, I've never had in my collection, I mean, I've read, but in terms of owning, purchasing, putting in my collection, an actual mainstream X-Men title. Like a book with the words X and Men in it. So when I see them in the cheap boxes, I just let them be. At this point, I'm too intimidated by the history of the book, the decades of continuity, and the relationships, to even be interested in grabbing a random cheap book and talking about it here. And I know what Marvel tried to do here with renumbering, and convinced me that by issue 32 of this title, there was only a couple years of continuity. It wouldn't be that big a deal. But it still just never really interested me, I have to confess. It's possible I listened to more episodes, and there were very, very few, of Xavier's podcast for Gifted Podcasters, or whatever that show was called way back in the day, than I have actually read a core X-Men or Uncanny X-Men issue. I wonder if most comic book fans, at least certainly this works for me, I only had room for one long-running soap opera of a comic book, and back when I discovered comics, I became a Legion of Superheroes fan. Maybe there just wasn't room in my brain, or as we'd say today, maybe I didn't have enough bandwidth to handle both the Legion and the X-Men. Maybe that's why I never fell for the X-Men, because I was already in a long-term relationship with the Legion of Superheroes. Which does bring up a question, then how did I end up picking this one? How did it get into the database so it was available for the randomizer? And here there are a couple of reasons. The big one is not even X-related, sorry. It's Miles Morales. I always kind of liked him, at least the dozen or so stories I've read with him. And secondly, Bendis's name on the cover didn't hurt either. So as a non-X fan, what did I think of this issue? It wasn't bad, and it was a fast read, which is good because it took a second reading to get a better feel for what had happened. I take some responsibility for that personally as a comic book reader, because I did kind of skip over that intro page, that the story so far bit, because I did want to test out the notion, the idea, that just reading the core of the story by itself to see what I could make of it. But that's not really fair, because the reason Marvel puts that information there on the first page is because of readers like me. They want a reader like me who can grab a book off the rack because they like Miles Morales, say, or pick it up out of the quarter bin because they like Miles. So that opening page of the story, it is a legitimate part of the issue, which is why I read the whole thing to you as part of the synopsis of the story. It really helped me understand the rest of the issue, and I thought it might help you as well. Now, I said that there are two main draws for me in plucking this comic out of the obscurity of the quarter bin. First was Miles Morales, and I think he was handled or portrayed very well here. Considering this is a group book or an ensemble book, the fact that he's on 8 pages out of 20 is pretty great, and he is the star of the centerpiece of the book, that 2-page scene where Jean reads his mind. So as a fan of that character, buying the book largely because of that character. The cover drawing me in because of that. I was very satisfied with how he was handled. If this had been one of those books with the cover that includes a scene that doesn't happen in the comic, or maybe just happens on the last page, that would have annoyed me to no end. But that didn't happen. He was on the cover. I was assuming he would be a big part of the story, and he was. So mission accomplished. The other thing that I had hope for was Brian Michael Bendis. I know he's a bit divisive, but the strengths that he has as a writer really intersect with my preferences as a reader. In comic books, especially one where I'm picking up an issue here and there, not brought into the long storyline or decades of continuity, all I really look for is character bits and dialogue. Yes, you have to have some things happen, quote-unquote. The plot has to be advanced somewhat. Now, that isn't necessarily Bendis' strength by a long shot, but the action in this issue was good enough. Not earth-shaking, not the best ever, but good enough. But what the issue did really well, it really sparkled. Yes, everyone sounded the same. Every hero character had a similar narrative voice, but they're all young, so you can dismiss that as a bit of a milieu, especially among the title characters. They go to school together, they live together, they're the same age. I can make that up as a reason that they would still all talk pretty similarly. Less so with Miles, coming from a different Earth, but still. He's the same age, so I can excuse that, at least a little bit. And certainly having read Bendis, I have come to accept that feature of his writing. I love the interactions between Miles and Jean. This is where Bendis is at his best. Characterization through dialogue. Otherwise known as, if you're not as big a fan of Bendis, two people talking while doing nothing. I get that. I don't see that as a problem myself, usually, but I certainly get that complaint. Her response is putting his arm around her to fly with her. Her giving him a warning before reading his mind. Now, that wasn't quite consent exactly, but it's pretty close for superhero work. She obviously didn't learn that technique from Charles Xavier. She must have learned that on the mean streets. Miles' comment about being a teenage boy, that whole scene, their whole interaction worked for me. Angel and the Mole Man worked for me, too. There was a case of a character, in this case Angel, having a bit of a different voice. Yes, he was snarky like everyone else, but his dialogue and responses were a bit different from the rest. And did I mention Doombots and Latveria? In the interest of full disclosure, I have to say that I did rearrange the synopsis a bit for the proper dramatic effect. Beast, realizing he is in Latveria, is in fact the penultimate scene of the comic. And the issue's cliffhanger is actually the scene with Amadeus Cho and the revelation that Jean may not be getting home anytime soon. But let's be honest. Ending with I'm in Latveria is a much better ending, so I chose to rearrange those scenes to more properly, dramatically end the issue. I mean, ending anything with I'm in Latveria is a much better ending. You know, for anything. A comic book, a movie, your vacation photos, a lecture on interest rates, anything is made better with the ending, I'm in Latveria. So that was a huge mistake on Bendis' part, and it's probably why Doom arranged behind the scenes to make sure he wouldn't be working at Marvel for very long after this issue came out, if you know what I'm saying. So to summarize, Miles Morales, good. Brian Michael Bendis, good, with a huge gaping, costing him his job oversight. Doombots, great. Latveria, amazing at this time of year. Meaning, you know, any time of year. It is right there in the slogan used by the Latverian Department of Travel and Tourism. Visitors check in, but they don't check out. Because once you're there, why would you ever want to leave and make contact with your family members back in the States or, you know, ever get on social media? Because once you're there, you don't want to leave. I don't want to spoil what I assume happens in all new X-Men 33, but I can imagine it's just all Beast settling into his new idyllic life, taking his Latverian citizenship test, spoilers, all the answers are doom, and living happily ever after. Unless the meddling editors that run hashtag Big Comic got involved. Troublemakers. I mean, I'm not going to read that next issue. I'm just going to assume things went well for Beast in his extended time in the Great Land. Anyway, the verdict on all new X-Men 32, it's always tricky to assess a modern issue because the idea of the standalone is just so, I don't know, 1980s? Because this isn't really an issue of a comic book. Yes, it was originally sold that way, and it was purchased that way by yours truly. But for practical purposes, this is 1/6 of The Ultimate Adventure, which is trade paperback volume 6 of all new X-Men. It's a chapter of a greater whole, and it's kind of silly to render a judgment on a chapter of a greater whole. And that's why this podcast carries such a heavy burden on me to make this decision, to have to render such a difficult verdict. Now, if this were the Dollar Bin podcast, or even the 50 Cent podcast, it might be different. But for a quarter, the presence of Miles Morales and the writing skill of Brian Michael Bendis, and of course, the Latverian cliffhanger, though not quite the ending of the issue, all of that pushes this over the very low bar of acceptable quarter bin goodness. It's not a slam dunk by any means. You have to like Bendis to like this, even though the Latveria thing did cost him his job. But yes, this comic book is a quarter bin deal. Hashtag Hail Doom.
Hail Doom!
Hail Doom!
Hail Doom!
By the way, I mentioned at the top of the show that this is one of the newest books I've covered here on the Quarter Bin podcast. But as I thought about it, there are a couple of ways to interpret that, to define that. Now, based solely on the cover date of the issue, and of course not counting the free comic book day issues or other gimmicks, this is the most recent book we've covered. November 2014 is the latest, most recent issue we've covered on a regular episode of the show. So defining it that way, most simply, then yes, this is the most recent book we've covered. But another way of looking at that, of defining that, is as the newest book. And that would be to think about how old a book is when it's being covered on the show. And defining it that way, this book is not The Champion. It could have been if I'd talked about it as soon as I bought it, but that didn't happen. Under that definition, we have to look back to episodes 56 and 57, wherein we covered the first 5 issues of Loki, Agent of Asgard, also purchased from Half Price Books, by the way. Those episodes came out in July and August of 2015, and we talked about issues cover dated April to August of 2014, which means those issues were from 12 to 15 months old at the time that they were covered. So if you count the cover date as the birthday, I know on sale dates are different, but stay with me just for simplicity's sake. Then those issues, the Loki issues, were the youngest issues that we've ever covered. They were just over a year old. For comparison, this issue of All New X-Men is, as of this episode's release date, well over 4 years old. Again, I apologize for the diversion. You just have to listen to my voice for one episode every week or so. I have to listen to this voice, these crazy ramblings, every darned minute of the day. And that wraps up our coverage of All New X-Men number 32, bringing Quarter Bin Podcast 132 to a close. Next time, we'll be revisiting a theme that we've done here a few times, actually, and that is of the Dead Universe episodes. Actually, as I'm planning to do 2 of these, probably back-to-back. And we'll be revisiting a universe that we last talked about way back in episode 23. That's the Techno Comics universe. And we'll be looking at Lost Universe number 1 and iBots number 9. Sorry, Gene Roddenberry's Lost Universe number 1 and Isaac Asimov's iBots number 9, cover dated April 1995 and February 1997, respectively. If you have any questions or comments about this issue or the episode, what I am missing and not reading more X-Men titles, or the podcast in general, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter bin.
The Quarter Bin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening.
Professor!